Hello, John Dennis here on Wednesday, the 17th of December. Today, Labour closed the gap on the Tories, according to a new Guardian ICM poll.
It seems to be that people are worried about their jobs, worried about the future, and so they want a government that actually is going to do something about it and look strong. And Gordon Brown's the leader who's managed to do that so far. David Cameron really has struggled a bit.
The teenage gunman who killed 11-year-old Rhys Jones shows no remorse as he's sentenced to serve a minimum of 22 years in prison.
For us as a family today is not the final chapter in this tragedy, but now at least we can begin the challenge of rebuilding our lives.
And 99 mafia suspects are held after a series of orchestrated police raids across Italy.
Paramilitary Italian police have found evidence of what they said was a tough and potentially dangerous confrontation within Cosa Nostra.
Guardian Daily with John Dennis on guardian.co.uk.
But first, today's news headlines with Sandy Waugh.
The Federal Reserve has slashed US interest rates to 0.25%, the lowest level in the nation's 232-year history. The new emergency steps are designed to boost lending to lift the world's biggest economy out of a deepening recession. In a move that surprised Wall Street, the central bank said the bleak outlook for jobs, investment and growth justified cutting interest rates from 1%. The Fed says it'll now expand its policy of buying mortgage-backed securities to support the housing market. Officials are now also considering the benefits of purchasing long-term treasury bills to push down long-term interest rates, a move first used by President Franklin Roosevelt in the Great Depression. The Guardian has learned an NHS doctor who was yesterday convicted of plotting massive car bomb attacks in London and Glasgow had been on an MI5 watch list. 29-year-old Bilal Abdullah, who's due to be sentenced, may have been tracked for 13 months. Whitehall says MI5 held tracers on Abdullah that included information that proved helpful to the police once he was identified as one of the bombers. However, officials insist there was no evidence available to them showing he was plotting an attack. The Tories' advantage in the polls has now been cut to 5 points, according to the latest Guardian ICM poll. Labour's cut sharply into the Conservatives' lead as voters turn to the government to protect them from the economic storm. It shows a 7-point drop in Tory support since last month, narrowing the gap between the two main parties from 15 points to just 5. Our chief leader writer runs us through the numbers in more detail in just a moment. UK's unemployment figures are poised to show a jobless total of 2 million, according to a report by a union. The TUC predicts the rate will hit 6% for the first time since 1999, meaning 500,000 people are set to face their second successive Christmas on the dole. Official figures are published later, with analysts expecting them to show more than 1 million people claiming unemployment benefit. The wider jobless total, which includes those not eligible for benefit, was more than 1.8 million last month. Scotland Yard is preparing to drop its leak investigation into Damien Green. A review of police actions has criticised the inquiry into the Conservative spokesman and questioned its proportionality. The Met is now to discuss the way forward with the Crown Prosecution Service as soon as possible. The Conservatives say it's a vindication of their claim Green had neither broken the law nor encouraged any civil servant to feed the party information. A quick look at this morning's papers now. No surprise with the lead in the FT. It says the US Federal Reserve has moved deeper into uncharted waters by cutting the interest rate to virtually zero. It also reports on how an Australian court has allowed a lawyer to use social networking site Facebook to serve legal documents on a couple. It's thought to be the first case of its kind. According to the Daily Mail, investment bank Goldman Sachs is to pay £4.3 billion in bonuses to its city workers. Further to the TUC's unemployment warning you've just heard, in The Guardian, David Blanchflower, one of the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee, warns the jobless total is likely to rise above 3 million in the current recession. Anger as Royal Mail goes Dutch is the headline in The Telegraph, with Lord Mandelson facing a backlash from Labour supporters after opening the door for a part privatisation of Royal Mail. The Sun prints it could be Sue, as the paper reveals Graeme Souness is the man poised to win the great Blackburn Rovers managerial lottery after Paul Ince was sacked. And The Times says Hamlin's in need of a new piper. It reports how the rats have returned to the sleepy German town made famous by the legend. More on today's stories and breaking news at guardian.co.uk.
According to a Guardian ICM poll today, support for the Conservatives has fallen to 38% from 45% last month. Labour has climbed 3 to 33%. That's the highest since April. The Liberal Democrats are on 19%. On ability to run the economy, Gordon Brown leads David Cameron by 11 points. Julian Glover says support for the Conservatives is in sharp decline.
Yes, it's a striking poll. It comes at the end of a year of polling where we've seen the Tory party really soar to some pretty big leads over Labour. Now, this December, they've fallen back down. They're below 40%, only 5 points ahead of Labour. Still, that's quite a big lead, but nothing like what they had a few months ago, and they'll be worried by that.
As the economic news gets worse, support for Labour increases. How comes?
Well, everything's puzzling at the moment. It seems to be that people are worried about their jobs, worried about the future. And so they want a government that actually is going to do something about it and look strong. And Gordon Brown's the leader who's managed to do that so far. David Cameron really has struggled a bit to get across what his plans are. Although he did do quite well after the pre-budget report, and our poll then had them on 45%, which was as high as the Tories have ever been. That's dropped right away. Clearly, anxiety feeds support for the government, not feeds support for the Tories at the moment.
How do voters rate Gordon Brown and David Cameron as leaders?
Well, we asked a series of questions about their character and which characteristics people thought one of them was strong at or the other was strong at. It's something we did a couple of years ago before Gordon Brown became Prime Minister. And back then, he was pretty unpopular. People saw Cameron as more honest. They certainly saw him as the best potential Prime Minister. Going back over some of those questions, Brown is now seen as the most honest leader. He's come above Cameron there. Cameron's seen still as the leader with the most potential as Prime Minister. So people perhaps like his overall style. They like the broad sweep of David Cameron. But on specifics, they still stick with Gordon Brown. So on the economy, Brown has an 11-point lead.
Looking back, Julian, at the last year or so of polling, it's been very volatile. Are there still a lot of voters out there prepared to switch allegiance again?
Well, there's two things can happen in polling, really. One is people change sides, and a few people do that. And there has been, since 2005, some movement from Labour to the Conservatives, and some of those people are still with the Conservatives. The other thing that happens is that voters of different parties get more or less keen to vote. So they don't change sides, they just decide to turn out or not. And opinion poll ratings always depend on asking people, are you likely to vote? And people who say, no, I'm not going to bother, they don't get counted. So maybe what's happened is less a switch from the Tories to Labour, but just Labour voters being a bit keener to show up.
And where does this leave the Liberal Democrats?
Well, it leaves them a bit forgotten, but not doing quite as badly as everybody says. It's Nick Clegg's first anniversary in power this week, not maybe a moment that's going to be marked with too much celebration, but nonetheless, he's on 19% in the polls, or his party is, which is pretty solid. It's not as good as they've been in the last year, but it's not as bad as other pollsters have had them. So they'll be relieved, but they'd like to do a bit better, particularly as the Tories are declining. They want to pick up some of those Tories.
Does today's poll make an early election more likely?
Well, frankly, I've got no idea. That's the key question people will be asking this week. Does a poll, one poll, maybe three or four polls, we've had a series now, create the conditions in which Labour really ought to go to the country? The thing that happened to Gordon Brown at the end of last year when it looked like there was going to be an election and suddenly there wasn't. I'm sure he'll be very cautious. Some Labour MPs will be more excited. And perhaps they all ought to remind themselves they are still behind. They're behind by 5 points. And at the last general election, the gap between the two parties was only 3 points. Michael Howard caught Labour up. Tories are still further ahead than Michael Howard was behind at the last election. So they're doing better, but they're not doing well enough to win.
Julian Glover, and there's full details of today's poll at guardian.co.uk/politics. Also on The Guardian's website, artists including Gillian Wearing, Jürgen Teller, Mark Quinn interpret Father Christmas at guardian.co.uk/arts. Stuart Jeffries goes out with the Salvation Army in Nottingham at guardian.co.uk/G2. And you can find out more about 20 key figures who will shape Barack Obama's presidency with our interactive guide at guardian.co.uk/America. A waste of a young life. They're the words of Judge Mr. Justice Irwin as he sentenced gun-obsessed 18-year-old Sean Mercer to at least 22 years in jail for the murder of Reese Jones. Reese was just 11 years old when he was shot dead outside a pub in the Croxteth area of Liverpool as he came home from football practice, the innocent victim of a dispute between rival gangs. Six other gang members were found guilty of helping to cover up Reese's murder. After the verdict at Liverpool Crown Court yesterday, Reese's father, Stephen Jones, said the court had come to the right decision.
Finally, justice has been done for Reese. Firstly, we would like to record our enormous gratitude to the Merseyside police officers whose professionalism and perseverance secured this outcome. From the day Reese died, the kindness shown to us by the people of Liverpool has been immeasurable. For this we will always thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Over the months we have found strength in the messages of support from many thousands of strangers around the world. For us as a family, today is not the final chapter in this tragedy, but now at least we can begin the challenge of rebuilding our lives. Thank you all very much.
The Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, called Rees's murder a heinous crime that shocked the whole of the country. Helen Carter has been covering the case for The Guardian.
The murder of Rees Jones was such a shocking story because he was an 11-year-old boy. He was he wasn't involved in gangs at all. And he literally walked into the line of fire, as the prosecution put it, at Liverpool Crown Court during his murder trial. He was on his way home from football practice. He'd just finished playing for the Firtree under-12s team. He was their star player. He had been playing penalties. He was in goal. His coach was taking the penalties, and his coach offered him a lift home, but Rees refused. He insisted on walking home. And unfortunately, that decision cost him his life as he walked into the line of fire. His killer was Sean Mercer, an 18-year-old boy from a nearby council estate who was a member of the Crocky Crew, or Crocky Young Guns as they're also known. He was shooting at three men, chiefly Wayne Brady, a member of the Nogger Dogs gang, who was standing with two friends when Mercer appeared and fired shots at them. By the time he fired at Brady's friends, Wayne Brady wasn't actually there. Rees Jones heard the first shot and was seen on the CCTV to look round, and the second shot hit him in the neck and killed him instantly. When they showed the footage at Liverpool Crown Court during the trial of Sean Mercer and his co-defendants, it was an audible gasp from the courtroom. It was really quite moving. People were so shocked by this footage. You could just see this blurry figure walking across the pub car park. And the next thing you know, he was floored, absolutely floored, and you knew he was dead. And it was just such a powerful image and such a shocking image and really quite distressing. The two gangs that operate in North Liverpool have been linked to 80 incidents. The gangs are vying for control of the turf for drug dealing. And unfortunately, this turf war had spilled over onto the Croxteth Park estate, which is actually a very pleasant estate, one of the largest private estates in the whole of the UK. It's just red brick homes, neatly trimmed lawns. All the homes are privately owned, very suburban, very pleasant, and absolutely as far removed from gangland as you can imagine. The gangs have been shown to be obsessed with guns, knives, souped up cars, vicious dogs and quad bikes. They are so arrogant that they upload their videos on video sharing sites such as YouTube. And one such film from the Crocky gang appeared to show the Smith & Wesson revolver that killed Rees, but the prosecution couldn't be certain that it was the same gun, but there it was for all to see on YouTube. Sean Mercer was interesting because he looked so young when he first appeared in court in April 2008 before magistrates. He looked incredibly young. He's got childlike features, very angular, sort of shaped nose, very pale, and he had dark hair at the time, which was longer. He was clutching some black rosary beads in his hands, and he looked more like a gang member than he did in April when he first appeared before the court.
Helen Carter. I'm John Dennis. You're listening to Guardian Daily. Still to come, the government's plans to part privatise the Royal Mail raise the prospect of a bruising conflict with the trade unions.
Peter Mandelson has suggested that the Royal Mail should seek a private sector partner who would come in and buy a stake of the business.
But first, 99 suspected mobsters are being held by police after more than 1,200 detectives carried out a series of raids across Italy. The country's chief anti-mafia prosecutor said the authorities had smashed attempts by the Sicilian mafia, Cosa Nostra, to rebuild itself after a major blow to its structure in 2006. The raids reveal a conflict at the heart of the crime syndicate over the way it's run. John Hooper is in Rome for The Guardian.
It was one of the most extensive operations that the security forces have mounted in Sicily. 1,200 carabinieri altogether were involved there on the island, and intriguingly, also in Tuscany. Quite what the connection is, we don't yet know. Many of these carabinieri, heavily armed, they also use dog units and helicopter units, mainly, I would imagine, to prevent the mafiosi who are being searched from slipping away.
How much of a blow is this to the Sicilian mafia?
It looks like a very serious one indeed. Last night, the police were putting up lists of the showing the structure of Cosa Nostra within Palermo and the surrounding area, indicating that they now had an extremely detailed knowledge of how the organization was structured. And it appears that at one point in the investigation, the key point in the investigation, they were actually able to eavesdrop on a Godfather's summit. And it was from that they drew much of the information that led to yesterday's arrest.
The so-called boss of bosses, Bernardo Provenzano, was arrested 2 years ago. Do we know who leads the mafia now?
No, we don't know. And one of the things that has emerged from this this operation is that in the investigation leading up to it, the Carabinieri, the paramilitary Italian police, found evidence of what they said was a tough and potentially dangerous confrontation within Cosa Nostra over who should be the new boss.
And how have the authorities got round the problem of omerta, the vow of silence that surrounds mafia activities?
Well, on this occasion, they were led to the those who are arrested, not by mafiosi who had turned state evidence, the so-called pentiti, repentant ones, but by the more sophisticated route of technological electronic eavesdropping.
John Hooper in Rome. The Royal Mail is to be partially privatised as part of a range of measures to protect its long-term future. The business secretary, Lord Mandelson, said the Dutch postal company TNT was interested in buying part of the business. He said the government would take on a share of the Royal Mail's £7 billion pension deficit. Lord Mandelson revealed the findings of an inquiry into the future of the Royal Mail yesterday. Our industrial correspondent, Terry McAllister, says Richard Hooper's report identifies enormous challenges.
I think the challenges are immense, as outlined by Richard Hooper, who's a former media regulator who's had a look at the business. This is the second report that he's done, and he was equally negative about prospects when he delivered a first report in May of this year. He's not negative that the Royal Mail has somehow got it all wrong, but what he is saying is that the kind of challenges that it faces, not just from private sector competition, but also from, and more particularly from, low-cost alternatives, and we're talking basically about emails and digital information, that the Royal Mail's got a position where it's like a ship with this massive superstructure on the top that's threatening to topple it over.
So drastic action needed. What does he recommend should be done?
Well, he's basically saying that one of the enormous costs and dangers to the Royal Mail is the pension fund, and he's saying that there should be some kind of government help in paying that off. It's about £3.6 billion at the moment, but it hasn't been updated, an assessment of those liabilities, for 3 years, and an assessment is expected in 2009. That's expected to show it's doubled. So we're talking £7 billion worth of liabilities, which is absolutely massive, is beyond the Royal Mail's ability to pay. The suggestion today from the government was that it would pay that. Quid pro quo, in a way, is that it will not continue, it seems, with full state-owned status. And Peter Mandelson has suggested that the Royal Mail should seek a private sector partner who would come in and buy a stake of the business. That's effectively part privatisation, which will be opposed by the trade unions.
Well, indeed, it's kind of pits old Labour in the shape of the Communication Workers Union against new Labour in the shape of Peter Mandelson.
Yes, I think it's hard to imagine that the CWU, which is the Communication Workers Union, is going to welcome in any shape or form the idea of private operators coming in and taking a stake in this business. I think they'll be opposed to that. But I think Richard Hooper, who did the report, has also outlined that the industrial action in the past and various opposition to certain changes in working practices has not been positive in helping to build a secure future for the Royal Mail as it currently stands.
Terry McAllister. Sea levels will rise even higher than previous estimates, according to scientists studying the speed of glaciers in the Greenland and West Antarctic ice sheets. The research was presented last night at the American Geophysical Union meeting in San Francisco. With the details is our science correspondent, James Randerson.
It's really a kind of update on the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's report from 2007. And it's looking at four different aspects of abrupt climate change. And I think the most sort of worrying finding from it really is looking into sea level rise. And it's saying that the IPCC was much too conservative, really, in its assessment of how much sea level rise is going to happen over the next over the course of the century.
Why didn't the IPCC take into account the ice melting at Greenland and the West Antarctic?
They did take that into account in their sort of discussions and in the wording of the report. They just concluded that it was too difficult to model it and too difficult, therefore, to build it into the figures. So that's why, you know, this upper figure of 42 centimetres is too low. But the detail comes in how the ice melts and how it moves down mountains towards the sea. And that the detail of that ice flow and how it's lubricated by water underneath the ice sheet from helping it to move is really what these guys are trying to get at. And as I say, they were trying to say, well, this report that suggests up to 1.5 metres of sea level rise by the end of the century is closer to the mark, and even that may be too conservative.
Is there any good news in this report?
There's some, I guess. I mean, two of the aspects they looked at were methane release from stores under the sea in high latitudes, and also the day after tomorrow scenario, if you like, of an abrupt halt to the circulation of the Atlantic, of which the Gulf Stream is part. On both of those things, I guess it's sort of good news in that they say, okay, the Atlantic circulation will reduce somewhat, but it won't have one of these abrupt stops. And they also say that looking back over sort of 100,000 years of data on methane, they reckon that it's very, very unlikely they put a figure on it. They say there's less than a 10% chance before the end of the century of an abrupt release of lots of methane. And the significance of that is that methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas, 21 times more powerful than carbon dioxide.
How are world leaders likely to respond to this report?
Well, I mean, it's, to be honest, the news up to this point hasn't exactly been good, and so I kind of doubt that suddenly, you know, people are going to see the light and completely adjust their policies on climate change, if you like. But it is from a very respectable source. I mean, this is from the US Climate Change Science Program. It's one of a series of reports that are kind of essentially updating on what we know from the latest IPCC report that was in 2007.
James Randerson, and in case you're wondering what the background chatter was in large chunks of today's show, it's because some of our interviewees were recorded in The Guardian's plush new building in King's Cross. I'm still stuck in our old building with our producers Phil Maynard and Andy Duckworth in King's Cross, producing the show, Ian Chambers. Many thanks for listening. My name's John Dennis. See you tomorrow.